lunch or the topic that put people off. I don't know. But I think there's still some people coming. I suggest we start with the last session for today, which is basically a discussion or roundtable on the whole internet governance debate and discussion going on at the World Summit of Information Society and the new internet governance forum that's been formed. The slides I'm showing here are prepared by Matthew Shears, our Director of Public Policy, who will unfortunately not be able to be here because he has to be in Geneva at all these internet governance fora. So he was the... Well, I think I'm lucky to be here, to be honest. And after that, I just wanted to give you a short introduction to the topic and some history on the Internet Governance Forum. And then at the end, I have some questions, particular questions for you and also for the panelists. We're going to have a panel of people here after that presentation. So, again, I have to present slides that aren't mine, so I hope I'll manage. Well, the World Summit of Information Society has started, probably now, in 2001, basically to tackle digital divide issues and to harness the potential of ICTs to bridge the digital divide. That's what they started to do. And there were three main issues that came out of the World Summit. And there was internet governance. There were financial issues, financial strategies to capacity building and digital divide. And the third one was ICT development and capacity building. So in the area of internet governance, there was first a working group on internet governance that came up with a report for the UN Secretary General. They then decided to continue that effort even after the World Summit was closed in Tunis. And there's now an internet governance forum. And there's another, I'll come back to that. And there's another process going on that's called enhanced cooperation. It's not quite clear yet what this is going to do, if this is only governments, if only governments will be represented there, or if this is going to be a multi-stakeholder effort. It's basically, as the word says, enhanced cooperation. It's trying to call for more participation, more inclusiveness of the existing organizations and institutions to allow more participations from, also particularly from developing countries, and also from governments in the other organizations where the governments maybe are not yet presented so well. So what were the key issues that came out of WISIS? Well, on the internet governance, one of the main results was, luckily, very minimal impact on the internet structures, on the internet infrastructure, at least so far for now. I think the internet community did a great job in making the government people and the policymakers feel more comfortable with the way things are run. I think it's more transparent now how the internet is organized, if you will, that it's not just a chaotic mix of people and organizations. It's not anarchy. There are a lot of organizations doing a very particular job, very particular technical, for a particular part, technical part of the internet, and we're all very well coordinated. ICANN, the IRs, the TLDs, the operators groups, the exchange points, all this underlying infrastructure is organized very well. And as that, also the recognition of roles and importance of those existing organizations has increased, and the governments understand it a bit more. I think we all did a good job in explaining to our policymakers how things work and that they don't have to worry about that. And it's not quite equal to governments yet in that discussion, but civil society and private sector and also now the internet community are kind of recognized as an equal stakeholder. We try to get the technical community, technical and research and internet community recognized as an equal stakeholder in this process, but not quite there yet, even though you will see at the end a lot of our friends are actually part of that new governance forum, so that's a good news. In general, what came out of the WISIS was an increased focus on ICT, on development, technology for economic development and capacity building. So the outcome of this was characterized as everyone was happy, which basically means that everyone can interpret the outcomes as they wish. I guess that's good and bad, because you never really know what people interpret it, the outcomes. And so there are some areas that we need to watch in the future, and that's basically the enhanced cooperation effort. It's currently mainly UN and governments, and the IGF, which is a bit more open, and some action lines that come as a follow-up of that. And the whole development focus that has been set out by WISIS, we shouldn't lose track of that. So the Internet Governance Forum, and there's a lot of quoting here from their website, just to give you an idea. It's a place to encourage dialogue and stakeholder engagement. So it basically has, I think the Governance Forum is an open forum, but they have an advisory council, like a program committee that sets the agenda. And there are 40 people on that council. 20 government representatives and 20 others, 10 from private sector and 10 from civil society. It's a focus on policy areas, not operations. So the focus should be on public policy areas, not on technical infrastructure or operations. It should discuss, like, you know, cross-cutting public policy issues. Should not have an oversight function. Should be neutral. And should actually not duplicate efforts that are already taken care of in other fora or other organizations. So it should concentrate on issues that are not yet addressed and that need, you know, coordination among stakeholders on an international level. And to advance development agendas, basically to contribute to internet governance capacity building in developing countries. Now, I always think, like, you cannot really be interested in internet governance yet if you don't have access. Right? Why would you want to participate in an internet governance discussion? It doesn't make sense if you don't have access, or if your connectivity is too expensive, or things like that. So I think we actually need to go a step back in that. And that was one of my motivations to organize the session here with Matthew, to find out what your issues are. What do you think this debate should focus on? Because they're sitting there in Geneva discussing some high-level stuff. It might not have any impact on your daily operations. It might not improve the internet accessibility in your country. There are some success criteria for the internet governance. They said it should focus on development areas that impact access and availability of the internet. Basically what I just said. Focus on cross-cutting international public policy issues. As I said, it has this program committee, multi-stakeholder participation. It should have a clear agenda with some limited topics on it that also can produce some practical results that people can take and go home and implement. And it shouldn't just be a discussion forum. And these success criteria are basically a summary of the input that has been sent to the IGF and to the Working Group on Internet Governance to take into account when they start working. It should be a place to exchange information between the stakeholders, because there are a lot of people with enormous expertise on this panel on this Internet Governance Forum, and the expertise, of course, needs to be used, and they should share information and best practices. Yeah, there has some more information on that. The Internet Governance Forum is led by a representative of the UN, Secretary General Nitin Desai, who's also been the chair of the Working Group on Internet Governance. There's a small secretariat led by Marcus Kummer, who's also been involved in the Working Group on Internet Governance. So there's some continuity there, which is good. They had some, you know, exposure to that topic. And the advisory group, as I just said, has been appointed by the UN Secretary General yesterday, and I'll have a list of them, of the names later. And the likely public policy focus areas that have been identified so far, or that were on the top of the wish list of the input that's been sent, is spam, security issues, capacity building, and digital freedoms. It's quite a wide area of topics. And there's a meeting, first meeting, well, there's a meeting tomorrow in Geneva. It's the first kind of pre-meeting, but the first official big meeting is going to be in Athens, in Greece, in October, in beginning of November. There's a lot of text on this slide. I think there's a lot of quoting from the IGF website, from the IGF documents. I'm not sure if I really want to go through all this. Yeah, it says it's just the beginning, and the success of the internet has driven internet governance to the fore. That's an important point, actually, that the whole that we have this whole internet governance discussion is, of course, because the internet has been so successful, and many countries, most countries have recognized, and most governments have recognized that this is an important issue for the economy and the development in their country. So we have to deal with that and have to make sure to understand how it all works. And yeah, because internet resources are considered as an asset of a country. Also IP addresses, domain names, the ccTLD, for instance, is an important asset for many countries, for most countries. So at the end, oh no, there's one more, what we should expect. Yeah, good question. It's a bit open what the IGF will actually produce, but as I said, it would be good if they produce some concrete results that people can take home and implement and, you know, work further on with their policymakers at home and the internet community at home. So people feel that it must show immediate results of value, or it will fail, it will just be another discussion group. The rehash of the RISIS issues will not be useful, because most governments actually have closed that issue and closed that topic, and they're now already dealing with them with other issues. The World Summit on Information Society is closed. Internet governance is but a small topic still open, and it would not be useful if the IGF would reopen all these issues again. Yeah, and we have to watch this enhanced cooperation, because it's not quite clear what's going on there. One topic there, of course, is the relation between the GAC and ICANN, or the GAC within ICANN, and how that can be maybe improved. And, work further in a multi-stakeholder cooperation. So I have at the end, I have a number of questions here that I wanted to pose to you and the panel, but before that, I wanted to show you that list. If I find it. Can you read that? I just want to go through this quickly. It shows the list of people that are nominated on this Internet Governance Advisory Council. And you will recognize some names there. Adiel is on, for instance. And yes. Also on. Yes, from Dakar on. Patrick Falstrom from the IETF, the IAB. Oh, Raoul, yes, I miss Raoul from LACNIC, he's also on. Aisha Hassan from the ICC. And Lohanto, who actually was supposed to be here today on the panel, but he's probably in Geneva instead. Nelly Makowski. So if you've Alejandro Pisanti, who's also been very active in ISOC chapters. He's running the Mexican chapter. He's on the ICANN board. He's a very good guy. He works there for the university. There's Nii, yes. Matthew, who's the ISOC staff, which is actually very interesting that they also put him on. I think that's very good. That ISOC is represented there directly. Teresa Swinart from ICANN. So yeah, quite a number of good people actually on the panel, and I'm sure there were others that I didn't spot so quickly, and I just wanted to give you an impression there. It has been published yesterday, so I'm glad Nii can be here and it's not in Geneva. So let me go back to my question slide. And maybe I can ask the panelists to come up and use it as an opportunity for you all to read the slides and Maybe we can have a panel discussion on that. Is Nii here? Can you come? And Adiel? Adiel, there he is. Well, Ken is not here. Alex? Pierre? Pierre D? Nii, bring Pierre all with you. Michuki? Michuki, where is he? There he is. Abdul Hakim is coming in a few moments, I think. And Sam Adereke from Nigeria, yes. I basically ask a number of people, doesn't mean you cannot, oh, there's Abdul Hakim, you're already here, so don't hide. I basically ask a number of people to come here to give their ideas on internet governance for Africa, if you will, or what the important key issues for Africa would be. What can I, you know, bring home and communicate to the Internet Governance Forum? But that doesn't mean you cannot participate. I really love some participation also from the room. And Nii has offered to chair this session or moderate this session. So I'll sit down, take some notes, and then maybe hopefully give a summary in the end after an interesting discussion. I had actually asked Anne-Rachel from ICANN to be on the panel, but she had to leave. So she asked instead Michuki to give a presentation. Well, she'd asked a representative from CCK to give a presentation, but he also cannot be here, so Michuki offered to do that for him. So the first few minutes he will have a regulator's head on. I'm not sure if he feels comfortable with that. And then later he will be here as a .ke, a CCTLD registry. So you want to switch? It's all a bit improvised, as you can tell.
Good afternoon. Well, this is not a position I'm accustomed to, so if I don't sound too much like the regulator, just understand that I come from the private sector. Okay. I'm going to make a presentation on the redelegation of the .ke and the experiences we had. From the regulator's point of view, basically from the government, one of the key things about the KENIC redelegation process is that it's a public-private partnership, which involved the government, especially the regulator. And the regulator actually is quite happy with the way the whole process went. And so Michael Katundu, who should have made this presentation, is always happy to make this presentation. Unfortunately, he was unable to do that because of the many events that are ongoing in Nairobi this week. So, the contents of this presentation, there are only 12 slides, so I'll try and rush through them as fast as possible. Basically, the first thing we're going to look at is, you know, what is KENIC and what was its role? KENIC, which stands for Kenya Network Information Center, was established to be the manager for the .ke country code. And it was established in 2002 to take up the role of administrative point of contact and the technical point of contact, being the sponsoring organization as part of the requirement with the redelegation process as per the ICANN and the IANA. And its objectives were very simple. First is to manage the domain namespace. Second, to promote the use of the .ke namespace in the country. And for it to be self-sustaining, it had to charge a certain level of fees, which were deemed affordable to, or rather not expensive, to be able to maintain its operations. And any surplus revenue which will come up as a result of the charging for the fees level for domain registration and maintenance would actually be used to support the development of ICTs in the country and the region. And also to represent the country at the local and international forums, basically to have a single voice which is representative of the local internet community. And last is to also build technical capacity in areas of DNS and the internet in general. So, how did we define what the local internet community is when we are setting up KENIC? We had to look at the key sectors that are involved in ICTs, and we went through to look at the government. So, of course, this being a government-related presentation, the government comes first. The private sector follows, the academia, the civil society, and so basically those form the key organizations, and they were to actually play different roles in the establishment of KENIC. So, for instance, in this case, when you apply for a redelegation process from to ICANN, I don't know whether anyone of you has tried that, but you'll find that there's a certain level of requirements that are actually required before the redelegation can be granted. So you need consent from the local internet community. So you must define the local internet community, and it involves people in that sector. They must all be in support of the sponsoring organization or the sponsoring individual, for that matter, if it's an individual. So in this case, the government was to actually play the role of the facilitator and the sponsoring entity. So basically, they must back the organization that is being formed. So they help develop the policies, the laws, the regulations. And then, in many instances and many countries, the government is always viewed as a neutral organization, though most of us in private sector don't agree with that. But they're supposed to protect the interests of the public and the private sector. But they tend to, you know, to be the other way around most of the time. And also create that enabling environment to support, you know, get funding and so on and so forth. The private sector, the private sector is good at doing. Coming from, I come from Kenya, and here in Nairobi, the private sector is more aggressive than the government. So we were the doers. We are the ones who take the broom and sweep. We are the ones who implement things. And most importantly, we have the skills to actually run a profitable business. So what was very critical for us is to make sure that the CCTLD is not functioning for 1 year after, the initial seed money, and then we have to look for more seed money. But actually, by the end of that year, we're actually self-sustaining. We're able to pay salaries. We're able to have connectivity and so on, whatever is required to actually ensure that the CCTLD operates indefinitely. So we had to get the private sector to give us models that would work. And also they were to get funding. The academia. Again, a CCTLD is functional, but if you do not bring the academic society, research and development, where do you get your expertise from? Where do you get people who you can train in terms, if you have, for instance, in our case, an internship program, how do you build more capacity? You get them from the civil society. How do you get people to advocate for the use of the .ke or the use of your country code namespace? You get the ICT. They're the loudest people in any room. No offense, me. And Sunday, no offense, I didn't say you're coming from a civil society, but basically they're the ones who speak the loudest. They're the ones who actually go to these forums and advocate for the use of a namespace. So we had to get all of them on board to serve different roles. So how did we manage our sustainability? Well, the startup money came from the government, so it's a good sign to show that government is willing to make this work. We charge a minimal level of fees. It's about $25. I don't think that's minimal, but by CCTLD standards, that's minimal. We have very few staff. Kenic to date has 3 full-time staff, and we have an internship program, which we have 2 interns rotating on a 3-month basis. Then we went and found connectivity, which was sponsored by the private sector. So the ISPs run, who are part of the membership from the ISP Association, they actually provide us with free connectivity to the exchange point, and we get our transit from the exchange point. And then the office space was given to us by the government, again, CCK. So all that was what we needed to get Kenic off the ground. That's in 2003. To date, we have registered about 3,000 domains in the 3 years. So we are up to 4,000 domains. We do an average of about 100 domains a month, new domains a month. We lose about 30% of them in a year because of retention reasons, which is something we are working on to make sure that we are able to stay, to keep those domains for the subsequent years. And initially, we started with 1 staff. I was the only staffer at Kenic. And now we have 3 staff, so, and 2 interns. So that actually helps us to grow. But more so, it's just to try and keep the workforce, a lean workforce, so that you don't end up using all the money you get from domain name registrations. So the lessons learned. You truly need some level, a good, stable, and reliable infrastructure. For us, what has helped is that all ISPs are connected to the exchange point. So registering domain names is always twice as fast as registering through the registrars located in the US because of the latencies. Most of them are between 20 to 30 milliseconds away from our root servers and the web servers that we used to create, the API that we use for domain registrations. And when they have to go to do the .coms, they actually have to go the other way around. Then we have these attractive incentives for them. If you have more than 100 domains, you get 15% discounts and so on and so forth. So based on the number of domains you have and based on the number of years you register. Another interesting thing is to try and not compete with the ISPs. So again, that reduces on the model that you have. if we were to support every person who comes in and wants a domain name, that means we'll have at least 7 people sitting in a customer service help desk to serve people who call in and say, oh, I want a domain name. What's a DNS server? All those questions. So since the ISPs already have this infrastructure, they already have at least 5 to 10 people sitting somewhere on a help desk, then they are able to actually serve as part of the support for the domain name registrations. And that has actually reduced on our overall operating costs. And the ISPs are happy with us because we are not in direct competition with them. So a win-win situation. And I guess that's part of governance. A contention issue is the location of the CCTLD. You definitely need to make sure that the CCTLD is in a place that everybody trusts. Usually, you end up having... There are probably 2 or 3 places where you can actually have a neutral place that everybody, the local communities, trust for levels when it comes to hosting of such a resource. What we choose to look at is that a CCTLD is a national resource. It should be used to develop ICT development in a country, especially in developing countries. So in this case, for us, the regulator's office, a government office, or a university were the most neutral entities we would think of. And so it just happened that the regulator was the most customer friendly and seemed to, you know, be quite keen in developing, or rather having the process realized. So we went forward to, or rather agreed to have Kenic located and accommodated at CCK. And that's where we are to this day. Again, technical capacity. You definitely need people who are able to set up the infrastructure to run the CCTLD. You need the money. You need people who are willing to put down money on the table. In this case, CCK gave $110,000, which was sufficient to at least buy the basic infrastructure, the servers, the routers, the switches, PCs, which are necessary for the technical people to set it up. You need the support, the ISP Association. I think for the first 6 months, my salary was paid by the ISP Association for me to work at the registry. Also, you need to take time and benchmark. What are other CCTLDs doing? Do not take... Say, okay, you know, we've set up our own CCTLD. We are going to reinvent the wheel and come up with our own CCTLD operating system. Because developing systems from scratch means time, means money. Which is, if you're a startup CCTLD, it's probably not much time and money that you will have. You want to get the operations off the ground. So benchmarking really helped us. In this case, we went to Brazil, we went to Uganda. And we also had evaluated applications from Australia and I think one more other country. And we settled on using the Brazilian system because it actually met some of the requirements of what we did want. And at some the initial stages, we used some open tools and scripts and then used the Ugandan system for a while and then migrated onto the Brazilian system. That's what we are using today. So you do not have to reinvent the wheel. Saves you a lot of time and money. So, thank you, and can I take questions now? Okay.
Yeah, if there are any direct questions to Michuki's presentation.
Ma première question, d'abord je remercie M. Michuki pour sa présentation, très 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 attrayante. Ma question c'est de savoir, bon, dans
please,
sa présentation...
Please, your name, identify yourself to help us.
Excuse, mon nom c'est M. Tchatchesi Issaham, autorité de réglementation du Togo. Merci. Donc je disais, dans votre présentation, vous avez fait ressortir différents organes. Alors, j'aimerais savoir comment ces différents organes coordonnent pour le bon fonctionnement du point KE. Ma deuxième question maintenant, c'est de savoir, est-ce qu'au jour d'aujourd'hui, le point KE continue-t-il par avoir une subvention, une aide de la part de l'État et des autres associations? Ou bien il survit de ses propres moyens? Pour moi, c'est les deux questions. Merci.
Okay, let me start with the second question, whether we are still receiving financial support from the government. By the end of the first year, we actually were self-sustaining. So after the initial seed money that we got of $110,000, we used that to buy equipment and infrastructure. Basically, the infrastructure necessary to run the CCTLD. After that, the first 6 months, Kenic started invoicing for the domain names that we had inherited from the previous CCTLD operators. Previously, they were not charged, so we started charging for them, and we used that money to run the operations. So, to date, we do not receive monetary value, monetary resources from the government or the others. What we do receive is resources in kind. So we have free connectivity to this day from the operators. We don't pay for the office space that we have with the government. So if you want to quantify that as monetary, yes, we have a certain level of support we are receiving. So we are still getting office space for free, though we pay for the water and the telephone bills. And then we also get free connectivity. So in return, we provide technical support to the exchange point at no cost. So again, it's intertwined. Now, the other question was, how do the government, the organs correlate? How do they work together? Now, the structure we have at Kenic is that we have a board. And the board meets once every quarter. Now, you've all met probably the Kenet representative, who is also Victor Chalo, is the chairman of Kenic. So he is the chairman of the board. The board meets once every quarter. We have reports to submit to the board. So as part of the team of Kenic, the Kenic administrative manager, the accounts, and the senior systems engineer are the ones who oversee the day-to-day operations. And then every quarter we report to the board. And then once a year we have an annual general meeting where the board meets the rest of the members, the local internet community, and informs them of what is going on, our audited accounts, and so on and so forth. Does that answer your question?
Oui, vous avez répondu à ma question.
Okay.
Sorry, Machuki. Just wanted to know if this was going to go up in the web. Because it has some very useful detail to point people to a model of how to run a CCTLD. I've sort of made this argument several times in internet discussions, internet governance discussions, but I didn't have this level of detail at my disposal.
Okay, just one more thing which I wanted to add that was not on this slide is how do you make them not fight for power? Well, this is the structure we have, and I think I'll put it up. I have another presentation, I'll have to dig it up. Yes, no, this is the governance issue. We agreed on having, we have 7 board members. We give the government more seats on the board, but we say they will never be chair. Yes, very, very nice. Because the government will never take up the position of chair. The chairman on all boards is the lobbyist, right? So he buys all the coffees and appeases everybody to make sure they're happy. So the chairman will always come from private sector. Private sector or academia all the time, or civil society, never from government. So if he has to move a vote, then he has to at least convince one person from the government. So of the 7, we have 3 seats from government and 4 from the other bodies. Right? So, yeah. 4 and 3, the other way around, sorry. Yeah.
Alan Levine, with my ZA DNA hat on. Very interested to understand your policy as far as second level domains go and third levels. Have you introduced any second levels recently? How many second levels do you have? What's the situation in that regard? Is it a single registry? Do you license registrars at all? Any more information on your policies, please?
Okay, we have 6 second levels. We've not introduced any from what we inherited. We are planning on to, but again, the element here is introduced what will have domain registrations. We have some second levels we inherited that totally have not had a single registration since. So it's a question of whenever you introduce a second level, there must be the interest. And so far we've not seen significant interest for us to introduce others. Again, it's driven. We have at least 2 forums every year where we invite the members, the public, to come in and tell us how or what do they want us to do better. And we've had 1 or 2 requests on some, but really nothing to quantify that. Once we open up 1 second level, we'll have 100 domains by the end of the year. Nothing. What was the other question? Yes, we do license registrars. They have to apply formally. They have to actually portray that they are capable in terms of technical expertise. They are able to support customers. They have DNS servers, because our system will not register domain names unless you provide DNS servers in advance. And then they pay a membership, an annual membership fee, which is about $60 a year. And for that, they get a certificate, they get CDs, they get manuals and stuff like that. And we train them on a cost recovery basis at least once or twice a year, which is a hands-on training similar to the AFNOG, on how to use the system and understand DNS better. So once they do that, then we accredit them. And so we have a listing on our website of who are the accredited registrars, of which we have about 25 now.
Mark Elkins, wearing my CO.ZA hat. Just as a matter of interest, okay, so CO.ZA isn't a top-level domain, but it does have 250,000 domains in the zone file, so it's quite big. We have 3 people on support, and as one of them is sitting in the audience and another is on study leave at the moment, the whole of the technical support part of COSA is being done by one person, yet we don't have accredited, registrars. Anyone who can read, can fill in a form, and can set up a DNS server can do that. So you don't necessarily need to perhaps handhold people so much, and you can scale to very large numbers with very small support staff.
I think I'll beg to differ on that, because the first, it goes in level of awareness. The first thing a client knows, does not know, is a domain name, but they know if they have a domain name, they get email. So they will want to get more, so they'll say, okay, so my domain name is there, why is my mail not working? That's not a question that we should be addressing. That should be at the ISP level. So I get calls, even today. Our phone numbers are not listed, but I still get called.
Hello.
That my email is not working.
Hello. I think I'll beg you. I have some 7 big men here. We can work it out, please, if you allow me. Yeah. Okay.
If you have questions, I'm here, and you can see me after as well.
Thank you for this overview of how that KE is handled. I think that's an interesting, that's certainly a governance topic. I want to bring up my other questions again. Just as I just wanted to put them up as guidelines for us all and for Nhi also, who's helping, you know, to moderate this session. So I think what is interesting to find out is what are the key governance issues for Africa. I mean, it's a large region, so maybe they're different for different countries, of course. You know, do you think they will be addressed in the Internet Governance Forum? Is that the right forum? Or maybe they already are addressed in some other fora? So what are the issues you think they should be covering? And maybe what are the issues that you think they should better leave alone? Also, I mean, the questions also to the panelists. What more can be done to address these issues on an international, regional, and local, national level? What are the best mechanisms for ensuring greater participation in the existing governance-related organizations? That's one question that always came up during RISIS. How can Internet, whatever does that means, internet governance-related organizations. Everyone understands different organizations by that. Maybe you can think about that. And what will have a lasting impact, or what will be the lasting impact of the governance discussions in Africa, or what is the desired outcome of those discussions? Are there any practical tips and suggestions you can give that we can all channel back to the Internet Governance Forum? And maybe to the panelists also, I think what would be interesting to find out, what are your kind of top three priorities in that field that you think need to be addressed, or your top three agenda topics for the Internet Governance Forum. So with that, I'll stop here and hand it over to Nhi, who will do a much better job in moderating this group than I can do.
Actually, not true. It's not true. I feel quite inadequate because the subject is so huge. I hope we can have at least an hour. How much time do we have?
We have to the end. Ah. Because we have time.
Okay. All right. Like I said, I feel that the subject is very broad and very difficult. Some aspects require very deep understanding of how things work, and other ones require understanding of level 9 above stuff. None of us is equipped to handle all that space. But fortunately, I have 7 very experienced friends here who will help me. But let me start by my own 1 or 2 comments, very short. I'm really very confused in the sense that we are in a digital divide, we say. Everybody seems to agree. They toss statistics at us, and it seems true. Yet, I watched for the past 5 years or more countries absorbed in developing policies and plans. Mm-hmm. I've also watched for the past 5 years, spending all the time talking about governance.
You have no network. You have no capacity. How do you develop these business-related policy plans? How do you implement them? How do you spend all your time on this governance thing? So I'm really confused as to even the relevance, okay, of this whole thing, just to throw it to that extreme. So what I'm looking for is to be convinced, okay, as to why is Africa even bothering. Is it one more of these diversionary tactics for you to fall further behind? Or is this one of those that is supposed to prepare you to lead the pack? And you have to convince me or convince the audience. Anyway, having said that, I think what I'll do is I'll ask each of you to give some opening comments or reflections or answers to these things. But I will pick the first three folks, and then we'll just take turns and go. So the first three folks that I'll pick are those that I'm certain have got their feet wet along the way. And so if you allow me, I will use that approach. So with that, I'd like to see if I can invite Mr. Pierre Danjinu and see if you can give us some reflections. Actually, we are right. Internet governance, UN forming it. Maybe UN should say something.
Sorry about that. Well, I don't know. My problem always is, I mean, which hat, you know, to wear in these issues. And of course, if you want me to address it as a UN, of course, I will say, well, but don't quote me, please. This is how we make our living, anyway. But having said that, I think I've been following the process, actually, the WISIS process. And one thing I notice is that to ever see the government, civil society, the business guys, you know, in the same room talking about the internet, I mean, for me, it was a wonder from the UN perspective or stand. Because as far as the UN is concerned, our summit, it's quite simple. It's the government. They come and discuss issues, that's all, and take these recommendations, and that's all. The rest follow. In this case, I mean, there were room for discussions, and in fact, one of the African ministers came to me and said, wow, now I understand the internet governance issue. Then I have to blame you guys, because you never told us, as ministers, what this thing is all about. It's domain name. Now I know this what it means. So I think if those people were able to be exposed to those realities, that's fine. Now, IGF, internet governance thing, I think I'm just like me. Should I be blunt on it? I don't see what Africa is getting from it. For just one reason, when the African ministers first met to actually see what they would get from the WISIS, when it came to this internet governance thing or whatever, the only one thing they said was the cost of connectivity. They said, why is it so high? And that was all. So are we going to solve this with the IGF? I know cybercrime, all of those things, you know, we know. I mean, some of the countries in Africa are renowned to be where the thing is happening, you know, cybersecurity, all those things. You know it. And I know some of those countries are taking some actions. You know, I've seen it in Nigeria, some of the places. It's happening. Yeah, maybe we can assist them, but I don't think that basically we are going to get anything concrete that will benefit the masses in Africa. Thanks.
Thank you, Pierre. Of course, sometimes the reason why we go is to make sure nothing breaks. So I share with you, but we are saying we'll participate nonetheless. Adil, I'd like to come to you, but I want to read something. I think this is something that was submitted by the African heads of state. And they said something like, We seek to ensure balanced access to IP addressing resources on a geographical basis. In this regard, we call for the reinforcement of the specialized regional internet resource management institutions to guarantee each region's right to manage its own internet resources. It sounded very nice to me. So I thought I would ask you to reflect on the whole process and where we are within that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ni. Before coming to the specific area of the internet resource management, just want to say two things about the whole internet governance discussion and the African participation. I think, yeah, all of us agree that we still have a lot of challenge building our network because it's difficult to talk about some advanced issue related to the internet governance when we don't have the sufficient bandwidth even to access all the documents we are talking about. So, yeah, we still have some internal challenge, and they are also part of our homework. But one thing I've noticed is that the whole debate put in a public place where people can discuss, participate somehow on raising the awareness toward our government in our region specifically, because one, it forces everybody to participate, at least be there and listen to what is being said by other, and at some point we have to have a position too. To work on the position, you have to understand at least a bit what is said. Third, it allows the engineering and technical community to have a forum, a formal forum where they can interact with the policymaker, with government body, because I saw that during the WISIS, at some point we got that interaction. So it's not the end, but it's a starting of something which I think we should continue and pursue in Africa. Now, coming to the specific management of internet resource, which is our area. Yes, the fair distribution of internet resources and the country rights. There has been several interpretation of that section of the WISIS action plan. From us as a regional internet registry, that means reinforced and allow government body to participate in our process, which is already an open and bottom-up process. I mean, the all country, all government, everybody are welcome to propose policy, to propose change on how the resources are managed today. For us, it's a way of saying that we need to encourage, we need to work with our policymaker to make their voice hear through the process which is already in place. There is an ongoing debate on this also at the ITU, and especially at the ITUT, about specifically about IPVCs. How can we manage the IPVC space to ensure a balanced distribution of that resources? There is a lot of argument ongoing, but the key thing is that internet is not a geographical a network. It's a universal network where country can be represented as a network. I mean, there is no physical border between network on a geographical basis. So it will be very difficult today to ensure that even reserving address space per country will allow us to ensure where we are going, because there are other specific issues behind that, like routing table management. What will be the end? Are we going for really for aggregation by doing that? What is the real goal? So the whole notion of understanding how the internet really works will help doing that. And we will follow the debate. We have the opportunity to be part of the IGF advisory committee to prepare the meeting. And we will try to focus. There is 10 issues which has been identified to be discussed in the IGF. They are listed on the IGF website, which includes cybercrime, interconnection cost, etc., etc. So, for me, those are some key issues where policymakers can work together. They are cross-border issues. They are linked to the security of everybody, and those are, for my sense, part of the issue which can be discussed at that level, and for which we cannot be left aside as African, because they have an impact on our environment too. So we need to follow. Maybe our priorities are not the same, but we need to be there. We need it allows us to raise the awareness where it needs to be raised. It allows also the technical community or the engineering community to have a forum to interact with the policymaker. And then I think I request from all of us here to also be very attentive on what is going on the Internet Governance and the Internet Governance Forum area, to participate and to express ourselves as a technical stakeholder in the process.
Thank you. So if I get it right, the end goal, we are not certain, but we know for sure the process is valuable because of the side effects that it has. So now I'd like to ask my philosopher here, Pierre Ouedraogo, to try and look at that balance between the end goal being elusive and the process being worthwhile, and give us some reflection on what other things we may want to do.
I thought that I was a technician, but I'm a philosopher. We'll continue our process. We keep on with French. Ayant suivi l'ensemble du processus du sommet mondial, la réflexion, enfin le constat que j'ai pu faire à travers l'ensemble de ces problèmes et qui vont, je pense, détendre sur la suite, c'est que dans cet espace, nous rencontrons exactement les mêmes problèmes que nous rencontrons dans les autres secteurs. Il s'agit d'abord de problèmes d'organisation, parce que généralement, le sous-développement s'accompagne aussi d'un problème d'organisation. Parce que si l'organisation est adoptée, forcément, on trouve les solutions et on devient développé à la fin. Et le deuxième, c'est cette question justement de développement qui suppose donc un manque de ressources criards et qui donc nous amène à devoir nous organiser différemment des autres parties du monde. Et pourquoi cela est nécessaire? Parce que avant le sommet mondial sur la société de l'information, il était possible pour un État, se basant sur sa diplomatie traditionnelle, de défendre les intérêts du pays, des citoyens, et au niveau des régions, de défendre, disons, les intérêts de la région. Mais avec l'approche qui a été amorcée à Tunis et confirmée, qui a été amorcée à Genève et confirmée à Tunis, il apparaît que les différentes composantes, et d'ailleurs l'exemple de Michuki tout de suite au niveau du Kenya est très parlant à ce niveau, les différentes composantes qui sont là et qui ont été les composantes qui ont fait avancer le sommet mondial vont avoir de plus en plus d'importance. Donc dans le secteur de la gouvernance Internet, il faut que nous développions ce que moi j'appelle la diplomatie numérique, en ce sens qu'elle va avoir des composantes qui s'appuient sur les différents secteurs. Parce que ce qu'on a constaté, c'est que nous arrivions désorganisés. Par exemple, on dit le secteur privé international, ils ont une voix, il y a une famille. On a des problèmes pour pouvoir se retrouver dans ce schéma, parce que tout simplement au niveau de certains pays, les hommes d'affaires ne sont pas organisés. Comment vont-ils pouvoir s'organiser pour faire entendre leur voix à l'extérieur? Et s'ils ne font pas entendre leur voix à l'extérieur, c'est la voix des autres qui sera entendue. Et donc, à la fin du processus, on va constater qu'on n'a pas tenu compte de nos intérêts. Et donc, on va se retrouver dans la même situation que ce qui se passe au niveau de l'OMC, au niveau de certains nombres d'accords pour lesquels nous crions aujourd'hui désespérément pour qu'on les révise, parce que tout simplement, au moment du processus, nous n'avions pas l'organisation qu'il fallait pour faire face aux questions qui se posaient. Donc, nous avons des tâches à faire, hein, des homework, comme on dirait en anglais, pour avoir, disons, un état de préparation local et un état de préparation international qui soit...
No, it, but that's how exciting the subject is. So, okay, we will calm down.
So there I got excited.
Yeah, no, very important.
It is so exciting. Donc, pour avoir la préparation, je m'excuse auprès des traducteurs, des interprètes. Donc, la préparation au niveau local, en ce sens que un État moderne se doit d'avoir un ensemble de structures préparées dans l'ensemble des secteurs, des stakeholders, comme on le dit en anglais, des parties prenantes en français, pour être prête à faire face à toutes ces issues qui vont arriver et qui, en fait, vont aboutir à des recommandations. Et dans le texte du sommet mondial, on dit que ce ne seront pas des recommandations obligatoires, mais à partir du moment où le monde entier se met d'accord sur un certain nombre de points et qu'il n'y a pas de discussion, ça finit tôt ou tard par devenir une norme internationale de fait. Donc il est très important que nous puissions peser de tout notre poids là-dessus et donc adopter un certain nombre de principes. Nous devons être dans tout ce qui existe. C'est-à-dire tout ce qui existe comme structure, nous devons y être, même si nous ne voyons pas quel est l'intérêt. Nous devons être dans tout ce qui vient. Ce qui n'existe pas encore qui vient, même si nous ne voyons pas à quoi ça va servir. Parce que c'est les principes qui sont appliqués par les diplomates globalement. On arrive quelque part, on ne voit pas quel est l'intérêt de l'État, mais on essaie de défendre l'intérêt de son État parce que la situation évolue et on ne sait jamais ce qui arrive. Par exemple, au moment où les ressources DNS étaient allouées, beaucoup de nos pays n'étaient pas au courant, ne s'intéressaient pas à ça. Et aujourd'hui, on se met à gesticuler parce que le DNS est géré à l'extérieur, etc. Mais au moment où ça se passait, il y a eu au moins une personne dans le pays qui était au courant, mais qui n'a pas accompli ce qu'elle devait faire. Et ça, ce sont des erreurs stratégiques que si nous continuons d'accumuler, notre situation de sous-développement sera permanente. Parce que nous ne pouvons pas chaque fois ramener le monde en arrière pour venir tenir compte de ce que nous aurions dû faire au moment où on devait le faire alors qu'on était au courant. Ça ne va pas se passer tout le temps comme ça et il y a des situations qui peuvent être absolument irréversibles. Et donc, peut-être pour ne pas prendre trop de temps et revenir là-dessus, je pense qu'il est de notre intérêt, compte tenu de notre niveau de préparation, de faire de sorte que les sujets qui seront traités soient classifiés. C'est-à-dire prendre un peu l'imitation qui est à la base même de l'Internet. Parce qu'on a ce qu'on appelle les RFC, Request for Comment, qui sont là, qui ne sont pas obligatoires, mais qui finalement deviennent pratiquement des lois. Et donc, arriver à un niveau de version, en ce sens que si nous discutons par exemple la connectivité Internet, qui est, je pense, le problème essentiel pour nous, notamment le partage des coûts au niveau des bandes passantes internationales, parce que nous payons actuellement les coûts les plus élevés. Et si nos réseaux continuent de se développer comme ils se développent, nous, à la fin, nous serons les bailleurs de fonds du réseau international. Et ce n'est pas normal que ce soit les plus pauvres qui payent pour que le monde entier fonctionne. Cette situation ne peut pas être acceptée et ne peut pas continuer ainsi. Mais à ce niveau, il faut que nous soyons prêts et que nous soyons vigilants et organisés. Et donc, s'il y avait un texte qui sortait, par exemple, à la première réunion en Grèce ou à la deuxième réunion pour laquelle le Brésil s'est offert pour accueillir, il y a un document qui sort. Il faut qu'il y ait, par exemple, un numéro de version et que, par exemple, on puisse revenir là-dessus et dire que c'est telle version qui fonctionne là-dessus. Bon, à la fois le fait que ce ne soit pas obligatoire nous offre cette possibilité de pouvoir faire ça et de ne pas être condamné. À la différence, par exemple, des textes de l'OMC, obligatoire, mais fermé une fois pour toutes et difficile à faire évoluer. Ce qui fait qu'on peut peut-être, au fur et à mesure, rattraper nos déficits stratégiques actuellement. Parce qu'il est évident qu'en Grèce, l'Afrique ne sera pas prête pour défendre totalement ses intérêts là-bas. Parce que nous ne sommes pas prêts à l'intérieur des pays, nos gouvernements ne sont pas prêts, le secteur privé n'est pas prêt, la société civile n'est pas prête. Quoi que nous déclarions, nous ne serons pas à 100% au mieux de notre forme pour défendre nos intérêts, pour exposer notre point de vue. Et dans ce sens aussi, je voulais partager avec vous une expérience au niveau notamment de la reprise de la réunion du troisième comité préparatoire qui a eu lieu à Tunis juste avant le sommet, où on a observé un phénomène, surtout en Amérique latine, de coopération entre les différents pôles et surtout avec le gouvernement. Bon, normalement, dans la salle du comité préparatoire, qu'on appelle PREPCOM, c'est le gouvernement seul qui peut intervenir. Mais on a constaté que, par exemple, au niveau de l'Uruguay, c'était Raoul Echevarria, qui est le président de l'ACNIC, qui parfois intervenait à la place du représentant du gouvernement quand c'était des questions spécifiques qui touchaient un certain nombre d'aspects de la gestion des ressources. Je pense que là, au niveau de l'Uruguay, il y a une utilisation intelligente des ressources nationales et une coordination qui permet que le pays puisse compenser les déficits. Par exemple, les diplomates, ce n'est pas les meilleurs pour parler des adresses IP, par exemple. On met celui qui est le meilleur pour en parler et pour défendre l'intérêt de la région et du pays.
Very exciting.
Et enfin, je vais terminer par le cas du Mexique, où il y avait Alessandro Pisanti, qui est le vice-président de l'ICANN, mais qui intervenait par moment pour le compte du gouvernement du Mexique. Je pense que c'est des situations qui doivent nous amener à réfléchir et à voir dans nos pays comment la société civile, le secteur privé, peut combiner avec le gouvernement de manière à ce qu'au moment des débats, ils ne puissent pas être coincés. Parce que par moment, par ignorance, ils n'arrivent plus à défendre une position, même s'ils sont convaincus de cela. Par contre, ceux qui sont en mesure de trouver les arguments qu'il faut existent dans le pays, sont peut-être même dans la salle, mais ils ne peuvent pas venir parler, ils ne peuvent pas venir apporter. Et donc nous perdons par manque d'utilisation optimale des ressources, des maigres ressources que nous avons. Merci et désolé encore pour les interprètes. Merci.
Okay, all right. So now I'm convinced. Africa must be added. I'm convinced. I'm totally convinced. But it took Pierre O, and not until after Pierre D and Adia. So I think we're moving on. But what it means is that we need to really work on the ground, from what I'm hearing. And I'm also smelling some African digital diplomacy here. So you know, remember that he said it. African digital diplomacy. So we have to pay attention to our participation along those lines. Okay, I think from that, now I'll just start from the right and go down, but I'll skip the first three and tell us specific answers where possible for some of the things that you think should be on the agenda and things you don't see as exactly on the agenda, and give us your own reflection if you can. Thank you.
Thanks, Ni. As usual, I switch in French. ce que je vais parler un peu en tant que société civile, c'est-à-dire ne pas être dans une organisation, mais en tant que société civile. Ce que j'ai appris du processus de la société de l'information, c'est qu'il y a aujourd'hui, comme bilan positif, une reconnaissance de la communauté Internet en Afrique. Aujourd'hui, aucun gouvernement ne peut ignorer qu'il y a en son sein une communauté Internet qui connaît les problématiques, qui les a étudiées, qui a œuvré généralement dans l'anonymat le plus total, like AFNAG, they do, but nobody knows, only we do, but Et là, je pense et que sans même le soutien du gouvernement, on a pu avancer sur certains points. Je crois que c'est un des points positifs. Ma crainte, c'est que ce qu'on a vu à Tunis ne se retrouve pas dans les pays. Cet espace de liberté et de communication qu'il y avait à Tunis, je ne ressens pas encore aujourd'hui que les États aient pris ça en compte dans leur manière de travailler au niveau national. Il n'y a pas de sommet de Tunis, il n'y a pas de pré-sommet de Tunis, alors que dans le plan d'action, au point 4.7, il est bien dit qu'on doit s'inspirer du processus et que la première chose qu'il y a à faire, c'est qu'on doit vérifier que dans les États, ils ont mis en place une cyberstratégie et qu'ils ont mis en place un processus multipartie prenante pour discuter des enjeux. Or ça, c'est une de mes grosses problématiques. Dans certains pays, ça commence à être pris en compte. Dans d'autres pays, non. Qu'attendons de Tunis, de la suite de Tunis, de l'IGF? Je crois que sur la gouvernance, il est important que la gouvernance insiste sur la gouvernance au niveau national et au niveau local. La gouvernance d'Internet, ce n'est pas la gouvernance au niveau mondial. Ça commence par l'utilisateur qui doit participer à définir ses besoins. Et moi, je pense que c'est là que nous devons surtout appuyer. Au niveau africain, nous avons une masse de personnes qui sont complètement laissées pour compte. Aujourd'hui, la stratégie nationale des régulateurs, je ne sais pas ce qu'il en est au Kenya, mais je parle au Sénégal et dans d'autres pays que je connais, Internet ne fait pas partie du service universel. Or, il est reconnu dans tout le processus du sommet depuis Genève que tous les États ont signé le plan d'action, ils ont signé les déclarations de principe et là-dedans, il est dit que Internet doit faire partie du service universel. Qui va s'occuper de la mise en œuvre? Qui va s'occuper de vérifier que l'État l'a fait? Qui va taper dessus? Watchdog, comme dit. Who is the watchdog? Donc, je pense que derrière, c'est là que j'attends de l'IGF. Le forum doit être ce censeur qui doit dire aux États, non, mais vous n'avez pas respecté vos engagements. Commençons déjà par le bas et montons, et je pense que derrière, c'est ça qui pourrait bénéficier à notre communauté. Mais encore une fois, je crois que ça ne va pas nous empêcher, le processus de Genève, le processus de Tunis, ça ne va pas nous empêcher de continuer ce que l'on fait dans nos pays, d'être actifs, de faire du lobbying, de travailler avec le secteur privé, de travailler avec le gouvernement, de continuer à asseoir notre présence et peut-être même de la rendre encore deux fois plus visible, pour éviter une deuxième crainte que j'ai, c'est qu'on nous considère que comme une marchandise et qu'on ne regarde que la partie économique d'Internet et non pas la partie sociale. Si on baisse les bras, on sera un marché potentiel pour acheter des équipements, vendre des technologies et être des consommateurs du contenu qui viendra de l'extérieur. Voilà, je vous remercie.
Sounds like he tells us that we should just do it. En français, action. I think, Michuki, if you can give us some.
Okay, I'll speak in English. I need some upgrade to speak in French. Okay. Well, at first when I heard of the discussion issues that were raised during the World Summit, I was a bit perturbed because some of the issues of discussions had already been addressed technically. My worry at that point in time, there was a lot of issue about equitable distribution of the root servers because there are only 13 of them. But little did I know that now they are close to 100 and a couple of them in Africa. There was an issue, they had concerns over equitable distribution of IP address space, of which the RIRs are doing a great job on, and cyber security and all that. All those are issues which are being addressed. despite that some of them are as a result of flaws in the actual technical design of the systems that we use, there are ways the engineers are, you know, from time to time working, or actually throughout working to find solutions to mitigate these concerns. So it's led me to try and see what other option or what other benefits is there through the World Summit. And after a lot of discussions and consultations with other people, I realized the key thing that Africa benefited mainly from the WISIS is awareness. Having been fortunate enough to attend the WISIS summit in Tunis, the one thing I realized is that we brought governments, and governments were enlightened by the fact that the internet is not just a tool for the elite. It's a way of life. It's a way of developing a country. It's a way of promoting the wealth and, you know, economic wealth to the citizens of their country. And I think that to me was the greatest achievement that WISIS did. And also, most importantly, that it came to Africa. It was the summit was held in Africa. As a result of that, there have been the items to be addressed by the IGF. What I actually would want to see at this stage is that how involved are the technical people, because some of them do not lie entirely in policy. You know, in essence, I would be happy today if, you know, for instance, in Kenya, if we had agricultural governance, because most of us have been farmers. At least we grew in a farm, so we would definitely know what, you know, what it means when we bring an issue of agricultural governance. But when it comes to internet governance, there are a lot more issues that are attached, the technical issues, that they are not clearly and well understood. So I would want to see a lot of corporations, a lot of consultation being given to the technical issues that do exist. How well can they be addressed? And if those issues have a technical limitations to them, then what policies are they going to develop so that they can actually enhance the technical side of it for things to work in a smooth way? Otherwise, at the end of it, what we are seeing is what has happened. Alternative routes, DNS root servers, alternative IP address space, and maybe another second alternative internet. So that is the extreme, and I'm hoping that that doesn't happen, end up being the case, that there's going to be a lot of concerned efforts between both sides. And I'm glad to see that, you know, they've elected, the people who have been nominated to sit on the IGF are coming from, you know, the technical group as well as the policy group, and that they will, you know, there'll be voices coming in strongly to actually articulate the issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Michuki. Let's give him a hand. You know, he also added insult to injury. He started scaring me. You know, after Pierre convinced me, he's scaring me. If we don't get together, I mean, things will go even worse. So now it's like we better jump at it and move very fast. Engineer Adeleke, did I get it right? Yeah. Sam Adeleke. As an engineer, you know, you've seen a lot of these kinds of challenges and you have fresh insights. How do you reflect the things that you've heard so far from the community?
First of all, let me say that there is a program they used to show in UK. They call it Mind Your Language. Whatever you say can be interpreted in different ways to people. And this is probably the reason why many government leaders attended that summit, perhaps believing that it will help them as government to be able to also govern the internet space. But getting there, that's again coming from the view of the UN man, getting there, they were able to have the best enlightenment they need. For the case of Nigeria, for instance, you probably are aware that it is right there and then that our own president made a commitment to ensure that there is an internet exchange in Nigeria. And I will say here that immediately he came back, he did everything to make sure that one is on course. That gave the support because, first of all, why we need governments, you should not think that it is only technical people. When we talk to ourselves in this room, we seem to understand each other. We are speaking a language we all understand, but they can't understand it. And unless they are there, there are some things that they will see as eroding their powers, as if they need to also put some impediments on your way. So we need them. We need to be able to talk these two languages, the political language, to make them be able to carry them along, to give them the will, to give them the readiness. But as much as possible, they should just be like catalysts. We should try not to get them too much involved in the actual governance of the policy of the internet, but we need to carry them along so that when we want to implement the policies that we decide, well, I'm okay with the composition 2020, but I'm saying that that has to be looked into. As far as I'm concerned, I think that summit is also serving another useful purpose. The various bodies in the internet community seems not to be cooperating well enough. And we need a kind of forum where the cooperation should also exist between these various bodies. For instance, I'm quite happy with what happened here in Kenya with the various internet community, one after the other. There's no fight or battle for supremacy. You only don't even know that there are different conferences going on. It's almost the same set of people. This doesn't happen in most countries. And there is always the supervising authority, which is the ministry, the government, that wants to establish that authority. I think this is an area where we are going to really look into. And if we can have this participation by all the stakeholders, without the Kenyan, with the Kenyan model, without the battle for supremacy or lordship or governance of that same thing, then there will be progress in decision and policy making. As an engineer, I don't want us to allow the infrastructural development to be an impediment. Just like others have said, I've gone along with them. Even if it's little we can understand for now, let's first go along. Let's catch up faster, and that's the good thing about Africans. We know how to start from the rear and how to catch up fast. And I think that is an encouragement for us to be able to be part of it.
Thank you very much. So, just a moment. As I understand it, think big, start small, scale fast. But, you know, I heard there was a very nice result as from the WISIS activity, and that you even got presidential, you know, assent with for IXP. So we're already getting results. Is there more WISIS we should have? How are we going to manage this? Some comments.
Yes, there is, but if you forgive me, I would like to take a little step back. Why is this important? Relevance. That's, I think, a very basic question, if I may add my own 50 kobo to the elusive end goal. Now, if we may take the premise that basically internet governance, as opposed to government, is basically to build internet management systems that are essentially fair and just and that are not skewed. And if I may give you a little story. In 1999, when it was clear that our president had won the election, himself and his core team started touring the world. Part of that core team was my own line supervisor, and he was in a hotel in a Western country. And his counterpart in that Western country asked him, oh,
you know, are you into computers? Can you use computers? And he had rudimentary skills, but as a typical African leader, he was wishy-washy. And so his counterpart told him, look, you see that television over there? He said, yes. Do you notice a keyboard near it? He said, yes. If you cannot use the keyboard to interact, you will not eat in this hotel. It is as basic as that. So based on the initial premise that I'm saying, literally, if we cannot utilize the internet, we in Africa will not eat. Now moving on a little bit, the whole, or let me just say, internet governance issues, I think should also try and be situated within some ongoing paradigm shifts that are occurring globally, but with, let's emphasize the African element here. Democracy. I speak for Nigeria. Prior to 1999, most of us were not quite sure what democracy is or was, and we're still learning. So internet governance has to be situated in that context. Also, the shift, the paradigm shift from the traditional worker that on a balance sheet of a company is actually, what do they call it? An expense, not an asset. The knowledge worker, you have to treat them differently. Also, there's another paradigm shift. Traditionally, if I like Nee's iPod, I go and beat him up and take it. But if I like the knowledge that Nee has, I have to make friends with him. Also, I think another paradigm shift that has also happened related to that is that there must be more emphasis on access to information as opposed to ownership. These are the kind of things we're trying to teach our leaders. On the issue of cybersecurity, which is something I have a pet interest in, yes, it is very true that there are no borders in the cyber world for the cyber criminal. But cyber law enforcement has to deal with jurisdictions. And that basically puts law enforcement at a major, major disadvantage. Related to this are issues of privacy. Countries I know, including my own, are looking seriously at things like ISP logs. I know that somebody in the US House of Representatives just this week has put a proposal forward for internet or all usage logs to be stored by ISPs. And even more serious are the issues of data retention. And quite frankly, we have to come up with good systems, the governance for on what basis does law enforcement get access to basically retain records of our conversations, of our internet exchanges. Because frankly, if you allow a local, maybe a middle-level police officer, he wants to chase your wife, he'll go and get all the information about you. It technically could happen, and that's why this is important. I'd also like to say that for me at this point, I would identify the three priorities as we were asked to identify. Access in terms of lowering the bar to allow a lower socioeconomic group of people to have access to the internet. But again, this is a requisite on putting in place what I would call the right political processes and systems. The technical solutions exist. That's not the problem. Again, I would also like to look at how we can push local content. I'll be very blunt with you. As an African, I know I myself and many, many people I interact with from Africa have a lot to teach the world. We have so many things. Is it in medicine? Our local plants that can cure diabetes, deal with malaria, and so many things like that. I mean, they're there, and they're disappearing. Our languages, like I said earlier, are disappearing. So how, it's not just a question of going to take in a willy-nilly fashion what the West, in this case, has to offer. It is what do we have to offer the West. And then, like I said, cybersecurity and privacy. And then, if I may slip in a 3.5 issue. In the Nigerian context, because of the legacies of the military regime, we essentially have no community radio. Somebody mentioned other ICTs. And what I'm getting at here is that in the Nigerian context, yes, we have technically one, but our brothers to the north in Niger have 127. Says something. But because our broadcasting commission is not on the ball to basically license or put in place the right processes for community radio, now that we're having podcasts that basically you can do WiMAX to very rural areas, suddenly you're going to find that these radio stations that are not allowed to exist in the radio spectrum are going to shift to the IP spectrum. And then that's going to be regulated by the Communications Commission, a different agency. So these are just some things I'd like to contribute. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try and go one more round and I'll come to the community, or how do you want to do it? we should home in. What should be on the agenda and what should not be? I've heard nice things said. I didn't hear free speech. Yet, I'm aware some countries are trying to ask people to buy ISPs to block IPs. So maybe someone should add that also in the thinking and advise whether there's something we can do, should it be on the agenda, and the additional things you may want to be on the agenda or not on the agenda. So we start from right again.
L'indépendance relative des régulateurs. Je crois que là, il y a encore un travail de renforcement de capacité. Non pas des gens qui sont en dessous, pas des utilisateurs. Parce que je crois que ce qui est bien, c'est que notre société sait maintenant utiliser Internet, sait qu'est-ce qu'elle en a besoin. Par contre, ce sont les gouvernants et les décideurs qui, eux, ont encore un gap à faire. Parce qu'ils sont, ils sont un peu comme nous, ils sont en retard d'une génération. Donc je crois que derrière, ils ne comprennent pas très bien ce qui se passe. Au contraire, ils ont l'impression que c'est une vague qui va les ensevelir dans des nouvelles technologies. Et il y a un risque majeur. Je vais donner juste un exemple. Tout à l'heure, notre collègue a parlé du WiMAX. Le WiMAX est une technologie que tout le monde considère comme étant celle qui va permettre de désenclaver les zones rurales en permettant un accès haut débit. Je dis ça off parce que je l'ai appris. Dans notre état, au Sénégal, la bande de fréquence du WiMAX a été entièrement réservée et pour l'État pour moitié et pour le nouvel opérateur privé pour autre moitié. Aucune possibilité n'est offerte pour les accès communautaires. C'est un risque. C'est un problème parce que soit l'État va utiliser cette bande de fréquence, soit le privé à travers un nouvel opérateur. Les règles de la concurrence ne s'appliquent pas, il n'y a qu'un seul opérateur sur le réseau. Donc, quelles vont être les conditions d'accessibilité à cette ressource? Question. Et je crois que voilà, moi, pour moi, pour rejoindre un peu, le chantier et le travail que nous avons encore à faire chez nous, et ça, peut-être que justement, le processus du sommet peut aider justement à positionner ces problèmes.
Thank you very much. Pierre, are you getting convinced like me now, or you are still doubtful?
I think me got me wrong. Because I think this is diplomacy, come on.
African digital diplomacy.
I think if you did get that, my point of view is that we don't have, Africa has nothing to do there now. That was not the issue. The issue is, and I think some of my colleagues said it, that you should go there but prepared. And I was referring to what some of the, most of the African ministers will have bearing in mind when this issue about the OSCE, you know, came up. Meaning we want them to help us solve this issue of, you know, access, cost, and that's all. And the issue is still there. So that, well, if you will consider that one, then you will say, well, is it going to be within IGF that we solve this issue? Maybe not. No, I think the point is, you should go to the IGF, but you understand that there is your own homework to do. That's my own concern about these things. When I did commit a paper on internet governance, when this preparing this thing with a few colleagues, actually, and George Sadowski, I think we chose to actually dwell on the developmental component of this issue. We felt that it has to be seen within the context of development. And I'm glad that some of the contributions that are already going to this IGF, that people are insisting on that. Okay. And I think we need to link also those things to this action plan, the Tunis action plan. Because someone said it, by going to this IGF, you should not forget that there was an action plan. And which is, for me, one of the most important, you know, thing coming out of this. And part of it was capacity development and also creating the enabling environment. Okay, I'm quoting those two where, in fact, UNDP is kind of leading, you know, agency, which we are happy with because it's about broadening possibilities, you know, to people. So to go back to your question, I think that you should get prepared. You said that freedom, speech freedom. I think right now the ten items that are listed, possibly most listed, and that might be from the framework for the debate. This include, in fact, this freedom of expression, thing like that, and human rights. I think it's there. Of course, it depends on how you use this. Because some of the things we witnessed at this forum is that some countries would like to use this to control, you know, the freedom of expression of people. That's why you need this sort of watchdog we were talking about, you know, your civil society. And let me just see two or three points which I think that at least African countries should concentrate on when they go there. Because we are thinking of 10 different issues. I'm not sure whether we have all of them ready, we'll be ready. I think there was an issue concerning the international, whatever, traffic, the cost or whatever. For me, the point is not just to be or to go there and say, well, why are you doing this to us? It should be, here are our solutions, okay? Because when we discuss this cost, people will tell me, well, but you guys are not even peering. You knew that this issue of, you know, you communicating, via the north and then coming back to yourself is bad for you, but what are you doing about it? This is what people will tell me. Why is people in Benin, and when they place a phone call, it has to go via France, UK, and then to Nigeria? Why? It's quite concrete. What is the solution there? And then you push your own position vis-à-vis this thing. Why aren't you doing this? What is preventing you from this? For me, this is quite a concrete thing that we should be dwelling on. Of course, the other issue I said is about cyber crime. Not so much spamming, actually, but I think cyber crime is important to Africa. And I think, finally, someone said it, bridging the digital divide, financing. I've been one of those people assisting African countries develop the e-strategy, whatever. I know that from the 53 countries, close to 35 to 40 has developed some sort of ICT strategy. I know at least half of them are shelved. Because no one thought about how we are going to implement those strategies. There was no action plan per se, There was a list of wish and project, but nobody said exactly how we are going to finance those things. I think it's important that at some point we stop and see how are we going to finance this. And that's why I think it's important to think about the environment, you know, we are creating in our countries, and then to provide rooms for kind of multi-stakeholder approach on those things. And the private sector, for me, is not really getting the share it deserves in Africa. I think these are simple, you know, issues that we should be targeting, and then we should be clear about them when we move to those, you know, arenas. Thank you.
Thank you. So you see, by asking the question wrongly, you get very clear answers sometimes. Michuki.
Thank you, Ni. Boy, I think all my points have now decided to evaporate, but I think one of the key things which I've had for a long time with the issue of governance is implementation. The whole discussion of internet governance, I think, has identified critical issues. However, the roll down to implementation or the road to implementation squarely lies in each country. It is not, they've created a forum where people discuss. And, you know, just to make a similar reference, is like AFNOG. We bring people, we've created a forum where people sit down and discuss technical issues, and it's upon them to go and try out what they have learned and build better infrastructure and scalable services. What I am yet to see as a result of the WISIS and the IGF forums, which are bound to happen, is what is the significant impact that has arisen after that? Well, there has been the case of, you know, Nigeria, where the exchange point is on track, but I think that seems to be one out of the 16,000 people who attended the WISIS. So there's a lot more that needs to be done at, you know, the basic level of you and I in terms of implementing the action plans, and it doesn't really lie with the government. More so, it needs to be spearheaded by the governments, because they are the ones who are, you know, in power and leading the, you know, the discussions. But mainly, it needs to be brought down to a level where, you know, issues of penetration will be addressed. There was an earlier question of where they don't know what Kenya has done with the Universal Service Fund. They have been trying to create the fund for the second year running. We are yet to see where that is going. All these are issues which need to be addressed, and not, you know, I don't want 5 years from now we're still talking about the same issues. And from where it's been 5 years since the WISIS and, you know, the issues were started being discussed, 5 years down the line, and the internet is evolving. You know, so now we have, when we started the discussion of IP address equitable distribution, there was an issue about IPv4. Now there's IPv6, which is already in use. Is there a question of equitable distribution of IPv6? Not anymore, in my opinion. So if we could address the issues at a faster level, I think there'll stand to be more benefit, as opposed to when the governments take a lot more time, or rather the implementation process takes a much longer time. Now, in terms of what are the key things that Africa should go to the meetings, I mean to these meetings focusing on, my key issue on the first is content. And I want to echo what Ajijola has said. It's a shame that Africa has no content to offer. It's a shame that we pick up all the content from out there. You know, the trends are actually, it's a pity to look at. But what needs to be done? I think that's the biggest question that the continent should be asking ourselves. What do we need to do? Because nobody seems to have that answer. If we had that solution, it would probably make it easier for us to address it. But I don't think there is a solution yet. Saying we need to create content, I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue lies elsewhere. because probably 80% of us don't own a computer. So, you know, we need to find a computer for them to start with. We need to provide connectivity for them to start with, for them to be able to put up content. I think there are a lot more issues, and if we could identify what it really needs to, or what it takes to have content, then we will have the content, and then we will have something to offer. So I think that's one of the critical issues that needs to be addressed. For me, it's far by most, because once we identify that, then we'll have enough content. And yeah, you know, in Kenya, it's for 10 megs, it's at $500 for a local point-to-point link. So I think that price could significantly come down if it's gotten to that low level. So it could be as low as, I'm meant to understand, in Seoul, Korea, you know, 100 megs to for about, what, less than $50 a month. So because over 80% of their traffic stays in Korea. So if we could identify what it takes or what it's required to actually have content in Africa, then the issue of penetration and affordability of internet will be past tense.
Engineer Adeleke, do you see some things that should go on the list or off the list?
sitting close by one another, sometimes maybe our heart is communicating. I want to talk first on the implementation, and I want to say that give Nigeria an example. It's not only the internet exchange point that has been an implementation since WISIS. The government is also working on another way by which penetration of internet can really go far, and there are two ways in which they are doing it. First, to try and set up an internet gateway whereby you won't be paying so much, because this is one of the things that is militating against the spread of internet use by people. When it's too expensive, people will first of all want to use their money to eat, not to talk of, before they think of internet. Secondly, the regulating body, NCC, is also having a kind of program whereby they want to subsidize the penetration of internet. And I'm trying to suggest bring this out to Africans who are here, because many a times we want to wait on external bodies to fund us. The internet exchange, we had some support from French embassy in Nigeria. It was to start on a small scale because the support was small. But when the government was interested, they put big support, which covers the whole country. Because one of the problems in Africa is, regional politics and so on. You can't do it in one without doing it in another, whether it is economically feasible or not. But with the government's interest, we are able to cover a wider area. And with the NCC's proposal, the concept is really to also revive the internet service economy, sector, whereby about 50 cities are going to be selected in the first phase. And they intend to, they want ISPs to be able to offer 1 meg broadband to individuals to 1 million within 1 year. I don't know whether you understand that. That is, well, you may think 120 something million Nigerians is 1 million is too small compared with 120 something million. But the question is, how many millions are actually having it now? So when we say 1 meg to 1 million in 1 year, if you ask the ISP industries to fund this, one, they'll be hesitant because there have been some militating factor. Two, they may not be able to cope because they don't have that much fund. Three, they will look at recovery costs. But with high subsidy coming from government side, this will go a long way. It is feasible. You know what the NCC did with GSM. It's possible. It's money that is really mitigating. So, and this will go to some areas that don't even have at all. So this is one of the things that I want us to look inward. And that's where the government's involvement is going to work. Now, when you look at, we are trying to bring down costs. When you look at A paper presented earlier today by the assistant professor, I asked within me, will it still be economical if you want to do these things in local language? Because the number of people who will do it will be small. An American can devise this. He already knows that he has a market of maybe 100 million, so the price can come down quickly. But when you know that the maximum you probably get is still less than half a million, there's no way you can bring the development costs to be so economical. But if you look at that, it will prevent us from moving forward. We just have to realize that we must develop ourselves. That's African. And I believe that the will is there, and we must be able to start somewhere.
Okay. Thank you very much. I liked it, but I felt that you said we should let the government do it. Mm-hmm. Private sector go away. We're putting up a gateway. We're gonna, you know. So I'm a little confused. Engineer, there was that one. Can you help me understand this?
No.
The government can be.
Je pense que un point qui est peut-être très important, j'ai changé d'ailleurs avec Adiel un peu sur ce point, c'est peut-être historiquement quelles sont les raisons qui ont amené qu'on ait l'IGF pour qu'on voit quelles sont les questions qui peuvent être traitées. L'IGF vient du fait qu'il n'a pas été possible de mettre tout le monde d'accord, à la fois les pays émergents, les pays les moins avancés, les pays développés, les mettre d'accord sur toutes les questions de la gouvernance Internet. Ça, c'est d'abord le premier point. Le deuxième point, c'est en se référant aux travaux du groupe de travail sur la gouvernance Internet, dont le document a servi de base pour les discussions au niveau du sommet mondial, appréhender le fait que la définition de la gouvernance Internet a été donnée comme étant très large, parce qu'il y a eu plusieurs discussions dans le groupe, à lequel j'ai eu la chance d'être observateur en tant que membre d'une organisation internationale. Et au début, c'était assez restreint, c'est devenu très large. Donc, à la fois, c'est un point sur lequel on n'était pas d'accord, c'est aussi un point qui est vraiment très large. Si vous allez regarder la définition, elle est vraiment large, on peut presque tout mettre dedans, enfin, en insistant un peu, quoi. Et donc, dans ces conditions, nous, c'est voir, puisque le sommet mondial reconnaît que la gouvernance de l'Internet doit être orientée en faveur du développement. Je pense que c'est à nous maintenant de déterminer les points qui, parmi la liste qui est là, doit permettre à ce que le développement avance, ou en tout cas qui va favoriser la création de conditions favorables au développement. Et c'est pourquoi je disais que nous ne sommes pas prêts, en fait. Parce que je ne suis pas sûr que nos centres de recherche, parce que ce n'est pas les autres qui vont venir réfléchir sur ces questions à notre place et trouver les solutions qu'il faut. Il faut que ce soit nous-mêmes, nos efforts de recherche, qui nous amènent à proposer des solutions. Et j'en veux pour preuve, par exemple, lors du sommet mondial, et notamment durant les travaux du groupe de travail sur la gouvernance Internet, GTGI, WGIG en anglais, il y a eu très peu de contributions africaines. Si vous voulez, vous allez sur le site, c'est wgig.org, je pense. Et vous verrez qu'on n'a pas eu beaucoup de contributions. Et chaque fois que les solutions de développement nous sont parachutées de l'extérieur, ça ne marche pas. Donc c'est en ce sens que je disais que tactiquement, si nous pouvions obtenir des formes qui correspondent à des versions qui nous permettent donc, parallèlement que les discussions se déroulent, qu'on s'organise pour arriver avec des solutions. Par exemple, on parle de la question de la connectivité internationale, qui est vraiment un gros problème. Mais nous n'avons pas de documents, d'études sur ça, montrant exactement comment nous voulons le nouveau système pour qu'il soit. Nous ne pouvons pas attendre des autres, pour lesquels le système ne les dérange pas, qu'ils mettent des efforts pour basculer un système dans lequel ils ne voient pas de problème. Si c'est nous qui voyons le problème, on doit amener, disons, la solution. Et donc, dans ces conditions, je pense qu'il est très important que l'un des points abordés soit, disons, les questions d'organisation. Comment arriver à ce que la mise en place de la gouvernance Internet au niveau international se reflète au niveau national, au niveau régional, de manière à introduire des mécanismes nationaux et régionaux qui vont en liaison avec les centres de recherche et toutes les parties prenantes, arriver à fournir la matière qui va servir pour aller faire les négociations là-bas, qui seront, je pense, un peu dans le même style que ce qui s'est passé à Genève, même si on dit que ça n'a pas un caractère obligatoire, parce que les intérêts seront forcément contradictoires. Mais si nous recherchons, nous pouvons trouver les positions médianes. Et il y a eu plusieurs cas au cours des débats du sommet où souvent c'est la position africaine qui apparaissait comme la position médiane qui permettait de réconcilier un peu les bords qui n'étaient pas conciliables au départ. Et je pense que c'est dans ce sens que nous devons travailler. Mais la priorité doit être, je pense, surtout au niveau des questions de connectivité, les questions de renforcement des capacités, parce que ça, ça me semble être des urgences pour notre continent. Et ces deux problèmes posent en même temps le problème d'organisation. Si vous n'avez pas les capacités, vous ne pouvez pas vous organiser. Si vous êtes organisé sans les capacités, c'est comme si vous n'avez rien fait. Donc, moi, je dirais que ces deux points sont des points extrêmement important pour l'Afrique. Merci.
Thank you.
I'll try to use this. Thanks. Yes, of course, we have to differentiate the outcome of the WISIS and the IGF, because one of the resolutions of the WISIS is to form the IGF to continue the discussion related to the internet governance. So the internet governance now we are going to discuss internet governance issue. The resolution and the action plan for the WISIS, the implementation and the follow-up is one other issue. Looking at the last PowerPoint presentation, I think the question was are we waiting from the IGF in terms of internet governance, which are our priority? Looking at the synthesis of discussion on the WISIS, for instance, there are 10 points here listed: spam, multilingualism, cybercrime, cybersecurity, privacy and data protection, freedom and expression, international interconnection and cost, bridging the digital divide, access and policy, bridging the digital divide, financing, rule for e-commerce, e-business, and consumer protection. That is the sense that they are not the point, but this is one synthesis. From these 10, what for us can be the priority, the top priority for us in our context in Africa, for instance? I could say, for instance, international interconnection cost. Can we do something to work together with other countries that could be a joint and an international discussion on dropping the international connection cost in our region? If that is something really we are concerned of, then that we should push all together for that. For instance, we want to develop e-business, everything. What about cybersecurity? How can we build the enable environment to develop whatever we want? Connectivity cost is the key point. When we are connected, we have access to the information. Everybody has the information, then we can start talking about more consistent and strong things. So for me, the top priority here, for instance, if I took there's 10 lists, interconnection is on the priority. Thanks.
Okay. One of the things that has been going through my mind as I've been sitting here is a question. What are we doing for ourselves? I don't have a good answer for you, but I think whatever it is we are doing, we certainly need to do a little more. If I may just follow up on what Engineer Adeleke had said earlier about fallout from the WSIS process. Basically, the Nigerian government, the private sector, and the civil society have been able to join forces on the TLD issue, and they've set up an NGO called the Nigerian Internet Registration Association, NIRA, which sounds like our currency, Naira. Now, for some background on this, this is my opinion, if you'll forgive me, but my understanding is that we are probably looking at the top level or our domain resources, basically the way we look at land. In Nigeria, land is vested in the government, and the citizen, through certain processes, can basically lease land for usually 99 years. In the case of your domain, probably it will be 2 years, but some kind of system like that is what we've evolved. Now, one of the things that actually helped us to get this organization together, I think we've just put in place the Board of Trustees. There's no other structure, so it's a work in progress. And what was very important was that we had to find a way of getting the commercial slash pecuniary interests versus what I would call the empire builders to appreciate that there was actually no money in this. And actually, there's no power in this. And as they say in Africa, when two elephants meet, we, the grass, suffer. And that actually was what was happening until we were able to convince them, like I said, no money, no power. And you found out a lot of people, interested stakeholders, fell away, and the process could move forward. Again, if I may move on, convergence is not simply about technology. It's about skills, it's about services. Frankly, it's about everyday life. We're trying to find new ways of interacting, new ways of society interacting. And I think we must, or I must emphasize here that, again, it's about combining solutions. High technology, low technology, and no technology. So that I think in our internet governance issues, we shouldn't get carried away by the high technology and the hype. As Nhi had actually mentioned, yes, privacy and civil liberties. Frankly, ICTs are very powerful tools, and the internet is a very powerful tool on its own, and it can be abused, and it is abused in certain circumstances. I also believe that the internet in of itself is going to fuel very, very complicated cases that are going to basically, we're going to question the boundaries of national sovereignty. And if you forgive me again, another small story. A couple of years ago, they discovered a 419 factory, basically a two-story building full of computers, broadband access, faxes, you name it, all the technology, in Amsterdam. And it was operated by, forgive me, a gentleman named Kofi. Now,
no relation.
No relation, Kofi, yes. And Kofi basically cooperated with a white Canadian and duped several farmers in Saskatchewan in Canada. And this money was routed through, I think, either the Bahamas or somewhere to Paris, where they stayed in the best hotels, drove wonderful cars, bought expensive watches, and basically blew the money. But what do we call this crime? Nigerian 419. I mean, you know. So there are some of these things we have to think about. Again, speaking in the Nigerian case, and I would suspect it would apply to many other places in Africa, there's an issue of attitude. It is easier, much, much easier, to get a government official, maybe any official for that matter, to spend $20,000 or $30,000 on a new car when he already has three official cars than to invest $8,000 or $10,000 in the internet so that his workers can be more efficient, and actually when they perform, he looks even better. So there's an attitudinal issue. I would also like to just touch briefly, if you don't mind, something else that concerns me, the MTN CNN generation. We see it in our universities and higher education institutions, again, forgive me, in the way some of our young ladies dress. But really, it comes down to the submergence of what I'll call our African values and culture. And even the CNN syndrome, you see one side kills an American, or murders an American, rather. But the American happens to kill the other person. They're different. But frankly, dead is dead, you know, especially when it's unjust. In some African countries, Nigeria has not yet gotten to this point, but in some African countries, the bureaucracy of getting your domain registered, frankly, just kills and frustrates most reasonable people who want to register. I think there's one country, I think you have to go through something like 42 steps. It's not going to work. Second to last, if I may, or third to last. yes, sorry. No, I'm trying to speak slowly for the translator.
The time is not on our side. Yes,
the Africans, we also have to appreciate that one of the ways to measure our progress is our problems today were not necessarily our problems yesterday. So, as Michuki said, if we are still discussing the same problems, then we've not made any progress. Just to build up on what Michuki had also said, where do we start? What some of us in Nigeria have tried to do in starting is, vis-a-vis content, is basically to encourage our higher education institutions to build virtual libraries. And we've tried to tell the people in those institutions, look, your students type their thesis and papers in computer centers. Tell them to bring digital copies. Even if you're not online yet, at least start building your archive. So I think this is one of the ways, you know, pending connectivity. So really, just to the other priority issues that I listed before, I would add intellectual property. If you do not create a situation where it pays for an African to sit down and articulate his thoughts, to articulate his intellect, if there's no system for him to benefit from it, then actually he will not bother to do so. He will go and do something else. And then we also have to look very seriously. It wasn't quite mentioned, but it was alluded to. Things like payments and the issue of legally binding e-contracts. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. I think we've been at it before for long enough. I get more mail from Canadian pharmacy than I get from Folia. Anyway, my issue is not how the ladies dress, but how the men don't dress. Actors have no colors. We will go to IGF. We'll go prepared, if I understood it correctly. We have to do it for ourselves, but we'll cooperate, if I got it correctly. Okay, so with that, I say thank you. I cannot say much more than what we've done before. So that's it. If you want to carry on. Well, let's give them a...
Yeah, I just want to thank all the panelists. And I thought it was interesting enough to actually skip the coffee break. But there will be drinks and receptions and food and everything out there after the session. If there's any urgent comment you really want to raise now, please do so. I actually plan to do an half open discussion, and I don't want to skip it all together. So I have 1, 2, 3 comments that... four, okay. So, Sunday, if you want to start.
Thank you, Miriam. I think we have a wonderful panel this evening. Great diversity, testimony to the vibrancy and, you know, stuffs Africans are made of. May I request that you find something very formal and detailed developed, and let's have this panel come back next year to really, really develop on the issues that have been discussed today. Once again, I want to congratulate the panel for displaying what Africans are made of.
Abdul Hakim, I was listening in the knock and had to come in. As you know, I think, is we could make it trivial to register domains in Nigeria. We could make it automated and it would happen in 5 minutes. You would only miss two things, knowing that people weren't lying, which seems to happen in about 90% of the registrations, and number two is not worrying if the servers work or not. So if you don't care if the domains actually work and if they actually are registered by the people who are in the organizations they say they represent, no problem. I believe it's Matutu.
That wasn't quite as scary as I'd expected it to be. there was another gentleman. Oh, there was Alan. Do you want to comment on that? There was Alan, and there was one other gentleman in the back. Yes, Alan, if you want to.
Yeah, I'd like to echo Sunday's comments. I think we're very privileged to have such esteemed gentlemen on such a panel, and also I'm very proud to have many of you on the IGF. I think it's fantastic to see many African faces in the Internet Governance Forum. What interested me was that it seemed to be very few government representatives in the list that Miriam showed earlier on. They're mostly people that are coming out of civil society, the ICANN type environment. And I was really wondering about what the panel's views were, or particularly those members of the panel that are on in the Internet Governance Forum at present, what your views are as to the fact that there are very few government people there. I was really expecting to see a whole lot more. Especially in line with many of the remarks that you've made early on about what are the responsibilities of government as opposed to what are the responsibilities of other civil society organizations.
Well, I'm not sure how the how Marcus Kumar, Nitin Desai and their advisors made their decisions, but it might have happened that some are wearing multiple hats in the, on the group, and that we actually managed to get some people into the government and delegations that have a technical background and have a more internet background. But I agree, the list is quite impressive, and I'm glad there's so many good people on that team. Do you want to comment?
First of all, I have a question. The open discussion is on this issue. On internet governance, I heard you say something about there's an open discussion after the coffee break.
There is no coffee break. This is the end of the session.
Okay. Yes, okay. My contribution is this. First of all, I would join others to appreciate the panelists and their contribution. But one thing I want to say, like somebody has mentioned, there is so much emphasis on the external without first looking at the internal. For me, there are two very key issues for internet mass penetration. The first is regulation. If you do a study across African countries, you will be sad by the various internet regulations that you would find. For example, I know even in Kenya, they might talk about the KINIC, but we know what happened with the internet exchange in Kenya. Nigeria almost followed the same path by licensing an internet exchange. And in fact, for 1 year, we were held up by a company that said they had exclusive license for internet exchange in all of Nigeria before that was resolved. I think we need to do a review. When the U.S. wanted to make a strategic leap, they had to review state by state regulations by the local authorities that impeded internet access. And it was funny. Detroit was the 10th largest city, but telco said they wouldn't go there. They placed it on 37 because they had too many regulations, tax and this and that. So why don't we do a review within African nations and come out what these are regulations that would make internet governance and internet penetration move very, very fast. And it also applies to law on cybercrime and other issues. Very funny things happen across the continent. But if we could harness the best and say, this is the best of regulations, it could happen. The second is finance, and we could get carried away with the Google and the Yahoo. But none of those companies were made whatever success they made without a lot of venture capital, a lot of very good money from people who could invest in their projects. In Africa, you don't have that. And I think that's actually what's happening with the broadband initiative of the NCC in Nigeria. They are simply saying it's not like subsidy per se. It's like this is finance to kick this off, maybe at lower interest rates or whatever, in conjunction with several bodies. Finance is a critical issue. We could say all we want to say, have the beautiful ideas, but without finance, we would not be able to go anywhere in terms of those 10 points. This is the critical issue in moving internet governance and internet in Africa. As with the content, we can get carried away and say, how do we create content? What is content? I would just say, do the internet exchange. The last mile can start in bits and pieces, not a national network, wherever it is, whatever locality, we could do that. We've seen a lot of it happen across Africa. And access devices don't necessarily have to be computers of $700 or $600. They could be lower. But the bottom line, really, let's look internally at what we need to put together by putting our house in order, and then we could go out there and say, this is our demand or this is our need. Thank you.
Thank you for this comment. I just wanted to react to that to the first point you mentioned, because I know there's already a lot of cooperation going on and information exchange between, for instance, the exchange points to learn from AMBET's current practices in their countries. And the same applies to CCTLDs in the countries. So I know, for instance, when ISOC's providing these or organizing these CCTLD workshops, one big topic in that is always best current practices, sharing of information, what are other people are doing, how can this be applied in our own countries, and that's a lot. That's very important. So that's part of the whole community building also. And I agree with you that we can learn from other countries' experiences. I just wanted to point out these two examples where I believe there is some cooperation already going on. Now, we have to make a decision. Do we want to continue this discussion, or do we want to break and enjoy, I don't know, the sun and drinks and food and continue this discussion informally outside on the terrace? Now, it's up to you.
Let's go and do it.
Just one more thing. As we discuss all this, we should not forget that the way, by design, the internet was not made to be controlled. So it should operate, it should be developed from the end user level. That's the only way it can develop further, and that's why it is where it is today. Thank you.
Okay, I need to make an exception. I see Randy back. All right. And we haven't had our tea. Guys, let's catch up and go get our tea. I don't know why we want to. There's no tea. Okay. All right. What do you want to do?
I think we should close.
We should close. Okay. But I can't. You want to close, right? Okay, all right, please. I'd just like to thank you all. I know there are many questions, many issues you want to get on the agenda. Feel free to, you know, write a note to any one of us so that we can channel it into the general discussion. And Sunday demanded, we better come back next year, AFNOG, AFRINIC, ISOC, INET. And
you know, respond to those you know, performance measures, I guess, benchmarking, as you guys tend to call it. So I thank you very much, and I'm very pleased that you were able to tolerate my unpredictable utterances, but it comes with me. Thank you very much.
So yeah, just to clarify, the reception was scheduled for 5:30, so I think they're just now having to tear down the coffee break and then to set up the reception. I have to apologize to the hotel, but I didn't want to break that discussion. So if you just stick around a bit, there'll be food and drinks provided outside at the terrace, on the terrace.
Check.
Ladies and gentlemen,